720 WGN. I'm John Landecker. It's 836. Thanks for tuning in. I thought a little bit of Eric Clapton's Cocaine might be an appropriate segue to our next guest. John, is your last name pronounced Rizvi? Do I have that right?
Yes, you do. John Rizvi.
Okay, good. You are the patent professor, an adjunct professor of patent law at Nova Southeastern Law School in Florida, and the author of two books on patents. And I want to thank you for coming on because we were trying to find somebody to talk about this story that came across the other day about the headline. Just grabbed me anyway. Just the headline itself was, "The Narcos Mexico Drug Lord Just Trademarked His Name as a Fashion Brand." And as I got into the article, I'm like, how is this possible? So tell me, how is this possible, John?
Yeah, so clearly, here in the United States, I mean, in American jurisprudence, a longstanding presumption that convicted criminals should not profit or prosper from their crimes. And so that's what I think is behind the how is this possible? Like, how can the Narcos Mexican drug lord, who's currently in jail, get a trademark on his name? Well, that's exactly what's happened. So it is possible. It's actually Felix Gallardo, the Mexican drug lord, used to work for El Chapo. El Chapo used to work for Gallardo, and he got a trademark on El Chapo 701. So this is not unheard of.
What is this just confined to Mexico, or are these first of all, my head is spinning about this whole concept. If Mexico allows somebody along the lines of these two drug lords to, while they are incarcerated, copyright their name, and as this article says, be able to put it on, let's see, amongst other things, jewelry, alcoholic beverages, footwear, hats, clothing, watches, books, and office supplies. Isn't that almost as, like, I read this as like the Mexican government really has a loose attitude about not only the drug trade, but the kingpins, if you will, the drug lords who participate in it. I mean, do you follow my reasoning on that?
I do. The trademark offices of the United States and, of course, in Mexico, these are government offices. So it's very easy to see as almost when a trademark office grants a trademark, it's almost as if they're condoning. Mm. It looks as if they're condoning the activities.
Yeah. That's the word I was looking for. Yeah, condoning it. Yeah.
So now I'm not an expert in Mexican law, but I know that they have the Mexican industrial property law, very similar provisions to the U.S. Trademark Act, in the U.S. Trademark Act prevents the Lanham Act, the registering of immoral, scandalous, or disparaging trademarks. But in the United States, most of those decisions where trademarks were rejected for being either immoral, scandalous, or disparaging have been deemed unconstitutional because they're content-based restrictions on free speech. So I don't know how, Mexican law is going to treat that. I do know that they do have restrictions against trademarks that are considered immoral or indecent. I just don't know how the courts are going to treat that if they have similar restrictions on content-based restrictions on trademarks, whether those are constitutional under Mexican law or not.
Now, does this mean that the El Chapo merchandise is already out there?
Oh, it's absolutely out there. In fact, their brand, I mean, it's funny, they're branding it as El Chapo 701, and I don't know if you're familiar with the 701 and what it stands for, but that was El Chapo's listing in Forbes magazine as the 701st richest person in the world, and that's where the El Chapo 701 comes in. But they have that 701 logo and the El Chapo name on protected for hats, belts, jackets, all kinds of fashion products, footwear as well.
And these are the drug lords that have been depicted on Netflix limited series a couple of times, right? I mean, I believe there was one that was more of a documentary, and then there was one that was more of a docudrama. Am I right about that?
That's true. You know, it's unfortunate, but we can't deny that there is a fascination with crime, and there are people out there that, you know, romanticize criminals, including murderers and drug lords. So this is even, you know, the success of Narcos Mexico on Netflix. I mean, that's a lot of what these series are tapping into, is people's fascination with crime. In fact, it's unfortunate, but there's an entire subculture of people that are collecting items owned previously by notorious criminals. I mean, they even have a term for it. They call it murderabilia. Oh my. And years ago, eBay would, you know, until there was a public outcry and victims' rights advocates kind of pushed and persuaded eBay to stop the practice, they were selling items. I mean, in fact, there's one site that sold, for example, the reading glasses for cannibal Jeffrey Dahmer for his reading glasses for $150,000 they were sold. So there's certainly a profit to be made in capitalizing on the fascination people have with these criminals.
Well, yes, and I that sort of leads me into the term morbid curiosity, so to speak. But, you know, there's a difference in my mind anyway between a fascination with the whole drug crime world and movies like Johnny Depp years ago was in a movie called Blow. And, you know, there have been many films about drug dealers and the violence and the action, etc. And that's one thing. I mean, in these movies anyway, the bad guys always end up being bad guys and bad stuff happens to them. Nobody gets away scot-free, although you go through like 90 minutes of them having a good time before anything bad happens to them. But that's, it seems,
that's right.
It seems to me that that's different than selling items from these people who are, well, this is going to sound so crazy, but I never ever thought I'd have to think about this. I mean, those glasses that you just mentioned, that guy's dead, but this guy is alive and he's in prison. I mean, and it's going to, who makes the money off of this? Does he get the money then?
Yeah, no, yes. And you're bringing up a great distinction. So in the Jeffrey Dahmer case, yes, so the glasses were sold, but he is not profiting. So it seems like we're okay with third parties profiting from crime, from this people's fascination with, you know, with just the drug and crime culture. But when it's I think what puts this in a different category is when you have the drug lord himself filing for a trademark on his name and profiting directly. Yeah. That's different. That somehow crosses the line. But you know, it's still under trademark law. That's based on selling goods or services and commerce, and they do have these restrictions. For example, in Mexico, on immoral or indecent content, but it didn't prevent this from being, granted.
We're going to talk more about this after this break on 720 WGN. John Rizzi, patent professional. Registered patent attorney. The more I talk to you about this, the more questions and thoughts pop into my mind. If you're just joining us, we're discussing the fact that convicted drug lords in Mexico who are still alive and in prison can due to Mexican patent and copyright law, register their name as trademark and then sell any item that they feel like and slap their likeness or some sort of phrase that they're famous for. For instance, you mentioned the number 701. What was that in reference to again that's on some of the clothing?
Yeah, so that El Chapo's listing in Forbes magazine as the 701st richest person in the world.
Well, you know, that
that's where the 701 comes from.
While we were away during the break, that got me thinking. If you're the 701st richest person in the world, even if you are a criminal, who's to say that a lot of people who have that much money aren't criminals? I certainly don't know. But I'm talking about being a drug lord. And that, and Forbes, I mean, there's not a more, what's the term I'm looking for? Reputable, rich person catalog, you know, magazine in the United States, Forbes, you know, everything's Forbes, Forbes, the richest people. If you make that list, you've got a lot of dough. And if you're on the Forbes list, there's a certain acceptance of your wealth because you're in that magazine. And you would carry, it seems to me that you would carry that into the prison in Mexico and you would have a lot of, let's just say, financial sway over people, if you wanted to, in government and anywhere else, even if you were incarcerated. Do you follow my thinking there?
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. They still have, what's the term, influence.
Exactly. That doesn't go away necessarily just because you're in jail, especially if the money's still there, if the assets are still there. It's not like they're locked down and not accessible.
Now, these folks have, well, first of all, who buys this stuff? Who would want this? I mean, I'm not talking about the things like Jeffrey Dahmer's glasses or things like that. I mean, there's a morbid curiosity there that, I mean, I wouldn't, it disgusts me, but I guess I sort of understand it on a certain level. But as I mentioned earlier, these are people who are alive, incarcerated, and have copyright now for their names and are selling things. Who buys this stuff?
Yeah, so, I mean, and if you look at some of the categories, that's how when you file for a trademark to protect the, you know, a brand, you have to state which categories of goods or services you plan to sell. So some of them, you know, kind of might make sense, like jewelry, maybe alcoholic beverages. But then others, like when you start looking at, like, office supplies, I mean, El Chapo brand office supplies, like, and even books, those get to be a stretch. I mean, I don't know if you want to get your markers and notebooks with El Chapo 701 on them. So some, you know, but clearly I'm not the target and you are not the target audience for this. I mean, but there's clearly demand, and there are people that's buying them. It's, you know, the trademarking is it's a little bit less icky, so to speak, than buying the actual items of, you know, Jeffrey Dahmer's eyeglasses.
Yeah.
Is not the same as buying a T-shirt that's, you know, with El Chapo 701 brand or something. It's, you know, one's a brand, it's a different product, and the other one is the actual item used by, you know, a convicted murderer.
But I think that the 701 brand of a drug dealer who is still incarcerated and you buy it, you're glorifying that person. You're walking around with their trademark on your personage or whatever else that you have. And that seems to be totally opposite of the idea of stopping people from doing drugs or the drug trade.
100%.
You know, you got Mexico.
100%.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't get it. And the only way I can think that this is possible is because these people have so much money, even if they are in jail, and that in Mexico they can exercise their influence. Because I don't see anything positive about this at all, except the family of the drug lords get to make money. I'm assuming that the, maybe I shouldn't assume. How about the other family members of these incarcerated individuals, the wives, the sons, the daughters, the cousins, whatever? I mean, are they in on this too?
Yeah, well, certainly, you know, under inheritance laws, like, yeah, they stand to benefit. But you bring up an interesting point about, like, glorifying the, you know, the criminal.
Yeah.
And but nobody, and everyone knows their name, but what about the victims? And
exactly,
we're seeing a lot of that sentiment recently, you know, even in the United States with these mass shootings.
Yeah.
And that's why you have a lot of media really focusing more on the victims and telling their stories, because a lot of times they're forgotten and everyone focuses on the shooter himself or herself, and that's where all the publicity lies, and nobody talks about the victims and what they did and about their lives. So
yeah, I hear you. But there's nothing like, I mean, I know the answer to this question, I'm pretty sure, even as I ask it, but there's no way in the United States that anything like this could happen, is there?
Yes.
Really?
I mean, there's no restrictions. Well, there are. You have the Lanham Act restrictions on immoral, scandalous, and disparaging marks, but they have not been. The Supreme Court struck down several decisions where trademarks were rejected by the Trademark Office under this basis, because it's a limitation on free speech. So I, you know, this is not something, I know in this case it happens to be, you know, a Mexican drug lord, but I don't think it's safe to say that this can happen in Mexico and the Mexican Trademark Office can grant these trademarks, but that would never happen in the United States.
Yeah. Well, thank you, John. We're out of time. We'll have to talk again sometime, because totally fascinating. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.